You're listening to Abound in Hope, a podcast from Imprint Church, where we explore how the gospel of Jesus Christ intersects with our daily lives to compel us towards gratitude and generosity. May the God of hope fill you with all joy and peace as you trust in him, so that you may overflow with hope by the power of the Holy Spirit. Romans 15:13. Thanks for joining us today. Welcome back to Abound in Hope. Thanks for joining us today. I'm grateful to have you here, wherever you're at, driving the car, mowing the lawn, hanging out. My name is Darren. I serve in the Teban Imprint Church, and I'm sitting here with a couple of my friends.
And Suzanne Hagelin.
And I'm Tom McGregor.
We are in a short series, a three-part series that we've been going over in Abound in Hope on chronic pain, living with chronic pain. And we kind of did our initial episode was about the foundation and how we should view it, what the Bible kind of says about it, just some philosophical stuff and some theological stuff about it, and how we as a community of Christ can have compassion towards people that are dealing with chronic pain. And then we heard from Roxy, a story that was so compelling to me, and also like it kind of built some compassion in mm-hmm. me, like as a community for people. Like her story was so intense, and to know that we as a community can actually surround them in some ways, even if we can't see it. And so it was cool. Hope it was helpful for you. That was chronic physical pain. Today we're changing it up a little bit to talk about chronic emotional pain, is the way we've kind of defined this one. And so I think, how do we define this? We define it as like mental health or mental diagnosis, depression, anxiety, all of those things that you can consider. And it's difficult to separate emotional and physical pain sometimes, because they sometimes aggravate one another as well, and there's overlap in some of those things. But I think we wanted to focus a little bit today on just emotional pain, and we have a guest for that. But before we get to her, our awesome guest, Suzanne, does the Bible recognize this kind of pain, chronic emotional pain?
It does, absolutely. Mm. I was doing a study not that long ago on all the different Hebrew words for pain in the Old Testament.
Wow.
And as I was cataloging and going through the different things, one of the things that was very striking to me is that the Bible doesn't really artificially separate physical and emotional pain, mm-hmm. because emotional pain can become physical pain, and physical pain causes, instigates emotional pain. And the Bible definitely addresses it on every level in many, many places, and surely takes it seriously.
Yeah.
I mean, if nothing else, we have Jesus sweating blood in the Garden of Gethsemane.
Yeah, totally. Tom, any thoughts on this before we introduce our special guest on kind of what you're thinking, our expectations going
in?
By
the time that this comes out, it'll be long past, but even in our passage this week for 2 Corinthians 1 and verse 12, like the word for pain is emotional, like intense anguish.
Yeah.
And there's people like Jesus who has like a full-blown mental breakdown, panic attack. But then there's people that just live with it for their life. And even the desperation of the woman that touches the edge of Jesus's cloak.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you see this come out again and again in Scripture, because Scripture is telling us about the real world.
Yeah. Yep.
And this is a reality of the world that we live in.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm reminded of how both of these types of pain, physical pain and emotional pain, are invisible to a lot of people outside who are experiencing it, besides maybe close family or whatever it is, and how we just have to, you know, have compassion and recognize that this stuff is real. And the things that people go through, especially when it comes to the realm of mental health or mental illness, that is a real thing. And and we want to acknowledge that there are people within our congregation that deal with things like this, and to know we in some ways we may not see you, but we understand or want to understand you, and want to walk with you through that. So just as we treat diabetes with insulin, we want to, you know, treat people that are dealing with mental health issues as best we can, however we can, and not just be like, let's pray that away, or you know, whatever it might be. So with that, we have a wonderful guest today, a friend, a lovely friend of mine who is a part of our church here. And so, lovely guest, would you introduce yourself and tell us a little bit of your story?
Hello, my name is Sarah Stoddard. I am freshly 26 as of March.
Woo.
I'm old.
Nice.
Not actually.
What does that make me?
Ancient.
Dang it.
I grew up in the Seattle area all my life, like the Sasquatch, I tell people, born and raised.
Have you seen the Sasquatch?
Unfortunately, not yet.
All right.
Not yet. Although I did grow up in the woods,
that's
so I had a lot of time.
That's right.
I am a nurse now. I've worked in a lot of different specialties, but have really enjoyed that aspect of my life. I grew up in a very large family. I have six brothers and sisters. I lose count of them sometimes.
Well, when you have that many, it makes sense.
It's too many to keep track of. I am a pastor's kid, but that's a whole interesting topic. I have been a Christian since I was a young kid, I would say, but I didn't know what that meant until very recently. I thought that God hated me, but I thought that he like saved me out of spite, a spite save pretty much.
What?
Oh gosh.
I don't know how that works, Suzanne, but that's what I always assumed. So I would every night be asking God to forgive me and don't let me go to hell. So I grew up pretty anxious, and a lot of mental health issues starting from a young age. And then as far as my faith, I moved out of my family's home when I was about 20, and I started reading the Bible for myself and reading the Bible from a different perspective. And I read the verse in Isaiah where God calls us precious and honored and loved. And I realized God can't think that we're precious and honored and loved and save us out of spite at the same time.
That
was really a turning point in my young 20s. And I've been dealing with a lot of mental health over the years and even after that. And I've been hospitalized multiple times for suicidality. And I've been in a lot of treatments. And I've been in therapy, a lot of therapy. Anyway, so that's a little snippets about me. What do you want to know?
Well, I think I'd ask the first thing, how has kind of mental health pain and emotional pain affected your faith and sense of well-being? What would you want? Well, that's part one. Part two will be like, what do you want us to know? So let's start with part one. I don't want to ask too many questions. How has this affected your faith?
Yeah, very greatly. I did feel closer to God when I was younger, like in my teens, even though I thought he spite saved me, which is kind of confusing. It was before I was like deeply depressed. And God was, you know, with me at that time, and I felt his presence a lot, even when life was really hard, because life has been really hard for a long time. And I grew up in a really unhealthy family, very chaotic. But I always felt like I had joy. And I feel like it started in late teens, early 20s. I felt like a light turned off, and I felt like I couldn't see God, and I couldn't feel him, and I couldn't hear him. And it was very dark and very lonely, and it was just so hard because I wanted to trust him and I wanted to pursue a relationship with him, but then I stopped reading my Bible and I couldn't pray, and I still knew that I was saved, but I just couldn't do anything, and I just felt so dark and heavy, and so that's really put a barrier. That really put a barrier on things for a while, you know. And I think also with mental health, having a lot of anxiety and not always feeling like I could trust God, or like a very insecure attachment to God, has, been something I've been working on for a while.
Did you feel like the depression caused you to not want to read your Bible anymore? Is that kind of what it was? It was like it was so debilitating. Was that kind of what was happening with you?
I think that it was partly that. I think that I also felt a lot of guilt and a lot of shame. Which I think is partly mental health, and I think was partly caused by some mental health. When I was 19, I started struggling like with self-harm, and I started just feeling so ashamed about that. I thought, I can't talk to God and hurt myself. And so there were things like that that were definitely a barrier. And then also the depression, there have been some times where I just lay there you know, or I've just been in like a dark room for many hours, and I get up and I go to the bathroom or drink some water, and then I go back to bed mm-hmm. and kind of wallow. Mm-hmm. So that
it's painful, isn't it?
Yeah.
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 It's really a very real suffering.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
How did, like, when all these things first started to happen, mm-hmm. How did it, like, change your view of yourself? Mm. And what was, like, yeah, what was going through your head mm-hmm. as you're having these experiences?
Mm-hmm. At first, when I started figuring out mental health stuff, and I started seeing a therapist when I was 20, mm-hmm. And that broke my parents' heart. I grew up in a family that was very anti-therapy.
Oh, gosh.
I don't need therapy, I have Jesus, you know. Mm-hmm. And so when I was like, I have Jesus and I also need help, I was like, that's something deeply wrong with me. Oh. And I shouldn't be like this, and I should just like pick myself up by my bootstraps, which I don't even know how you pick yourself up by bootstraps. That doesn't make sense.
It's a weird phrase. Yeah. It really is.
You can't do that.
I don't know what to say about
that. That's like 19th century United States. It's not,
I wasn't alive then. It was originally to recognize the impossibility of something, and it's changed
meaning.
That's
interesting. Yeah. Of course. Yeah.
Exactly.
Right? See? You can't do it.
Yeah. Would you say that now you feel more comfortable with the reality that, yes, you do love Jesus, and yes, you need therapy?
Yeah, I...
Are you okay with that now?
I feel like I have come a long way with that, mm-hmm. and I, like, was a psych nurse for a long time, so...
Oh, wow.
I've lived a lot of mental health, and I've cared for a lot of people who have mental health issues, and so I think partly through education and learning about our brain chemistries and mm-hmm. the physical effects of trauma on our bodies and our brains, and... I am on medications, and it's just like, if you had cancer, you wouldn't say, I have Jesus, I don't need a doctor, you know, you take medication and you see specialists, and sometimes mm-hmm. you maybe need to go to the hospital. And so I think that I've had a lot of normalization of mental health issues, mm-hmm. And also just practicing, like, all of our brains need help, and we all have mental health and mental illness in different ways and on different spectrums, and so I do feel a lot more comfortable. And also how mental health has gone along with my relationship with the Lord has been really impactful on that as well.
Cool.
Do you feel like you manage your mental health now, or do you feel like it's part of your day-to-day experience that you just have normalized it? Like, what is that? Because this has got to be painful to have a sense of the lights being a little dimmer than most people may experience, because that's kind of what you feel, right? Mm-hmm. So how do you carry on a day-to-day basis?
Yeah, partly I have learned to be kinder to myself.
That's good.
And I've learned to sometimes take breaks and sometimes to say I can't do this or that, because my energy is lower and I do have chronic fatigue and physical health issues as well, which are also combined with the mental health.
Right.
So I mentioned the beginning.
What you mentioned. I feel like having a lot more acceptance towards when I'm not able to do things, and also more freedom to explain, like, oh, I can't do that, I'm having a hard mental health day, when before I was too ashamed to talk about my mental health or that I was struggling. So I would cancel, and then I would be like, oh, I'm a bad friend, and all of the stuff, and everybody's going to hate me. And I don't feel like that as much anymore. And also I feel like lately I have been doing a lot better with my mental health. I'm still depressed, and I still have PTSD, and I still have nightmares and anxiety. But I feel like for the first time in my life, I've thought about my future. And that's been really cool.
That's really cool.
A pretty recent development.
Yeah.
And so even with that, I'm holding that openly of, I don't know how long that's going to last. You know, mental health comes in cycles sometimes, and it can go up and down. So I kind of ride the wave, and hopefully I'll be excited for my future, and maybe I'll want to die again, and both of those are okay.
Mm. you know, it's interesting because most 18 to 24 year olds think a lot about their future. And so mm-hmm. you had this season of nothing, like it was not there for you. So it's cool to hear that there's something out of this, but also to be able to hold the tension of like, okay, Lord, I'm here. What's next? You know? So yeah. Do you attribute a lot of that? Just, this isn't about counseling, but do you attribute a lot of that help to kind of walking through counseling and some of the things that you've done? Or what do you attribute some of that coming a little bit out of the darkness and seeing a little bit of sunshine?
Yeah, too? I think that a big part of it has been counseling and yeah. medications and mm-hmm. a lot of different things like that. And also being part of a good church community yeah. and chosen family.
Chosen family, I like that.
Yeah, y'all are my chosen family.
Yeah.
I've never had a place where I felt like supported and like I could mess up and still be loved. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, being somewhere where you can mess up and still feel loved is really healing yeah. and very impactful.
Definitely.
Yeah. Can you talk cool. a little bit about your experience in community over the last several years?
Yeah. Like at Imprint specifically?
I mean, anything you want to talk about. But
like, even the highs and lows, right?
Yeah.
Like, so it's like, this was great.
When people have been Bozos,
perfect.
And they screwed up and you still loved them.
Well, you obviously weren't an Imprint yeah, then.
Yeah. You can't be anywhere with that. That's right. The people who have hurt me most in life are people who have gone to church and mm-hmm. been leaders. So, mm-hmm. you know, it happens. Mm-hmm. How long have I been coming to Imprint? Like 3 years, 4 years, something like that?
You ran with us at Woodinville for at yeah. least
I feel like
two
I
and a half,
met
3 years.
When
we were combined.
22 or 23.
Yeah.
So it must have been
when I was
22.
A little baby.
Yeah.
That's right.
You were working in Kirkland.
I think.
With kids.
I was working in Redmond.
Redmond. It was south of
they're
there.
They're the same
whatever.
Thing.
Yeah.
They're the same thing.
Yeah. I would agree with that. Kirkland and Redmond, the same thing.
The
sorry,
same.
Friends.
Sorry to everybody. Sorry to Kirkland and Redmond. I'm not actually sorry.
But Bothell is not the same thing. There's
no.
a difference in Bothell.
Bothell is not like the other.
There's
girls.
Actually a difference in North Bothell and South Bothell, too. But that's a whole. Anyway, keep going. Yeah.
Anyway,
back to my experience, you guys. Pay
yeah,
attention.
Tell us about your experience in community.
It has been a long journey to start trusting people and also to not take everything personally. Mm. And there are people in church and every church at Imprint and anywhere who are going to be hurtful mm-hmm. and say really horrible things
yep.
sometimes. Somebody has said that my hair is like dirty dishwater blonde, so that's
oh,
rude.
Gosh.
Oh,
that's not the worst.
I grew
thing
up hearing
said.
That one. Who
everybody
started
says that?
That. It's really annoying.
Bless their hearts.
Yeah.
You have beautiful hair.
Bless their hearts.
But yeah, so I've had a lot of times where, especially disclosing like mental health, I'm like, oh, I'm so anxious. Oh, you should just pray.
Mm.
oh, I'm so depressed. I can't get out of bed. I can't feed myself. Oh, go on a walk. Or have
so
you just read this book?
That's gaslighting.
Or
yeah.
That's like saying your problem isn't really mm-hmm. valid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's also saying I'm not comfortable enough with your problem to sit in
exactly.
the pain.
Exactly.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
I don't want to hear it. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's also your fault because mm-hmm. you should just be better.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And just get up because that's how that works. Mm-hmm. and then I have also had people who have taken me to the hospital when I was suicidal mm-hmm. and visited me there. And Tom, you visited me there. You've seen me at some of my my low lows, and have still shown up and still asked me, how can I help you? And I also have worked through a lot of, I can only be at church if I'm helping and serving. And so I took a long break from that where I wasn't serving yet. I wasn't serving in kids. I wasn't greeting. I wasn't doing anything. I needed help. And I needed to be cared for. And I think that being accepted when I couldn't show up how I thought that I should or how I needed to was really important for me too. Mm-hmm. And then having situations where other people have messed up and come to me and apologized mm-hmm. and I've messed mm-hmm. up and I've gone to them and apologized. Mm-hmm. And yeah, and just talking about like, people continuing to share the gospel with me in physical ways, in bringing me food, in paying for my rent when I couldn't work. And so that's been so good. Mm. Such like the hands and feet of God mm-hmm. in a lot of ways. Mm. So
it's interesting. You've seen the highs and lows of a church community and life and what it can look like. And yeah, that's mm-hmm. I suppose that's pretty normal. But for someone who especially deals with a hidden, you know, chronic emotional pain, that's mm-hmm. it could even cut deeper, I imagine, a little bit.
I also don't trust pastors a lot of the mm-hmm. time. Yeah. You know,
I mean,
and
for good reason, right?
My dad's a pastor, mm-hmm. and so mm-hmm. that's also
and yet you've a hung
barrier.
Out, you've hung out with me and Tom so much, so it's
you know, I was wary of y'all at first.
It's okay. Yeah,
fair enough.
I'm okay around. With that. I'm kind of wary of myself sometimes too.
as I
rightly should be.
It's the mustache.
Never trust somebody with a mustache.
Go to personal relationships for a second, mm-hmm. if you don't mind, Sarah. How has your chronic pain of emotional pain affected your close personal people, not just the people in your church family?
Yeah, I think that question is a little bit hard because a lot of the people I was close to before, I'm not necessarily in relationship with, like a lot of my family members mm-hmm. I don't talk to. Mm-hmm. I think that it's also hard because I don't know what I'm projecting on other people and what is actually real. I assume that people get really tired of me being tired and canceling or needing help or
that's
being,
hard.
Yes. And I'm sure that that's true sometimes. You know, I felt
sometimes
tired of taking care of other people sometimes too. Like caregiver burnout is very real in different ways, you know. And I know that I've had friends that have missed me when I like couldn't hang out for a while. So I'm not really sure the impact of it that it's had on other people. Mm-hmm. I know that people have been really worried about me. I know that I've scared a lot of my friends before when I started to be more honest and mm-hmm. especially like at hospitalizations or when I've needed to get treatment or couldn't afford my rent and they're like, oh, are you gonna be okay? And mm-hmm. I was like, well, I have a car if I'm homeless. And they were like, oh, well, let's figure that out.
Can I pull on that thread for 1 second and just kind of say, like, what would you have wanted your friends or your closest people to know? I alluded to this a little bit earlier.
That's what I was going to ask.
Like, what would be the thing you'd say, hey, I deal with this and you may not understand it, but like, if you had a total honest, like, moment, what would you do for us?
Yeah, I think that it's partly hard because a lot of people don't understand my perspective and sometimes the normalcy of my mental health issues and just like the chronicness of them. And so sometimes I've like disclosed like a panic attack, or sometimes friends have seen a panic attack and they get freaked out because they don't know they're like, what is happening? Are you dying? And I'm like, no, I just feel like it. I'm going to be fine. Mm. And so I really appreciate when people ask questions and try to listen, not necessarily from their perspective or from what they know, and that's impossible to an extent, but just trying to put themselves in my shoes and not bringing all of their preconceived notions and putting them on me is helpful. And then also times when I couldn't hang out or wasn't doing well that I wanted to, you know.
Interesting.
Like, it's not like I'm like,
I'm not ignoring you or I'm not spiting you.
It's
or
not anything. Apathy. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's not rejection.
Mm-hmm. It's not about the other person. No. It's just, you know, I'm doing my best sometimes.
What are some things perhaps that were not as helpful? Things that you would recommend that we avoid?
Just pray that away. Yeah.
Just pray that away is a horrible thing to say.
Yeah.
Never say that to anybody. I know y'all won't, because even when I was wary of you, you didn't say that. So thank you. I think that also, times when people assume that they can fix me or save me has been so hurtful. Mm. Or why didn't she reach out? I would have done this or that. And I literally couldn't. Sometimes I've been so depressed, I can't send a text. Mm-hmm. I can't call. Like, that's not gonna happen.
Do you feel obligated by that when people say something like, oh, you should have texted? Does it feel like, oh, one more expectation, I let you down?
It's another expectation that I have to say sorry for. Right. I'm sorry I didn't text you. Thank you so much for helping. Right. I'm okay.
You're taking care of someone else's feelings.
I'm taking care of someone else. Yep. Yeah. Yep. And it's also still putting the blame on me.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And the responsibility on me. Mm-hmm. Instead, things that have been helpful are, what meal can I bring you this week? Or mm-hmm. can I fold your laundry? Or things like that, which people have done too. And also not assuming that someone can fix me. Yeah. And also, I don't even want to be fixed all the time. That's not realistic, no. You know?
Hmm.
It's like with any chronic illness, it's not going to just get fixed. It's not going to go away. And there are really hard things in life. And that's... it's not okay, and it is okay at the same time, you know.
How has the experience impacted your relationship and conception of who God is?
Yeah.
Wait, can you say that one more time?
Yeah, sorry, it was poorly phrased.
No, it's okay. I also zoned out for a second.
Nice.
She does this when you're preaching on Sunday sometimes.
Yeah, I know. I see everybody looking at the herons behind me. And
hey, I used to also come to church after night shift. So,
yeah, oh, yeah, straight.
Be so for real with me.
Yeah.
I think you apologized once to me for like falling asleep during a sermon.
I'm
I was like,
so
I didn't
sorry.
Notice.
So,
yeah.
Thank you. Like, yeah. Anyway,
I was just glad you were there.
How has like the journey? Over the last, you know, decade, informed how you currently view who God is and how you relate to Father, Son, and Spirit?
Yeah, I think there's still a lot that I'm trying to figure out in that. And
me too.
especially reconciling a lot of how is a good God in such a broken world, you know, and all of how did I grow up in such a broken family and also like in the work that I've done caring for kids who have been abused and how does that work, you know? And so I think with a lot of that, I trust God and I trust his character, and I say I can't figure out everything, and I am going to trust and accept that, and also seeing a lot of good that God has done and seeing how he has still carried me through. And I don't understand a lot, and that's okay. But God is always so faithful. And there have been so many times where I was so anxious and I thought, I'm not going to make it. You know, I didn't think I'd be here today. I thought that I thought I was going to die 6 years ago, you know, and many times after that. And I didn't. And so many times where I thought I can't pay the rent or I can't buy groceries. And it hasn't always been in ways that I had hoped. I did not win the lottery. I was not rich, you know, but God provided through a food bank or through churches or through many different things. And I think that that has really helped my view of God, because I don't understand that. I would like to be a millionaire, you know, I would like to have that stress. But God provides in the small ways sometimes and in the big ways. And I think also just being more open to beauty. And there have been times where, I don't remember where I heard this from, but going beauty hunting. And so going on a walk or that's just great. In like a day-to-day, like going that's to a coffee neat. Shop and looking for things that are beautiful or thinking about how the character of God reflects in that moment has been really helpful in my relationship with him.
Mm-hmm. That's like an aspect of God's character that can kind of comfort you in the midst of the darkness is seeing God's beauty. That's cool. I really like that.
Yeah. Or like how real the rain feels on you, you know, when it's been a horrible, horrible day and it's cold and it's windy and the rain smells so good and it's so real and lovely, and like gifts like that from God.
That's cool.
Just like the realness, you know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Petrichor.
I love it.
that's the name of the Smell of the Rain, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. How do you, if I can ask kind of a personal question here, and please, you can deflect it if you need to, but if you have a moment of desiring self-harm or suicidality, mm-hmm, or anything like that, what do you do now? Like, is that like just something you can't fix, mm-hmm, quote unquote? I mean, people can't see me. We don't have a YouTube channel here, but fix it, but what do you do in order to get through that?
Yeah, those are things that I still struggle with pretty, mm-hmm, frequently. And that kind of comes and goes, you know, and I think in those moments I have to remind myself this is not forever,
mm-hmm, yeah,
because those moments feel forever when you're in
them.
They do. And it's, mm-hmm, like, I will never feel better if I don't self-harm, and I will never get relief if I don't die. And I kind of have to give myself a, hey, girl, let's take a pause.
Hey, girl.
Maybe like, hey, baby girl, let's sit down for a minute.
Good job. Well done.
Seriously, that's amazing.
Yes.
Yeah, and also being in community with other people and knowing what I would say to them in those moments.
Yeah.
Because I have talked to many friends, mm-hmm, and support groups and my own patients and things like that and been like, this isn't forever. And right, I see other people in the cycle of it. Yeah. I see other people like, mm, go through these low lows. And they feel better sometimes, mm, and they see a little bit more perspective sometimes. Mm-hmm. And so I try as much as I can to carry that with me, and to know this will pass.
Yeah.
You know.
That's helpful.
Yeah.
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 Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, we have an enemy who, mm, wants, mm-hmm, to kill and destroy and demoralize, and the Lord has provided what we need to resist him. But do you think that ever comes into play? Are there times, mm, when you feel like, mm, I'm under attack right now? I mean, is it, what would be your perspective on that? Because I know sometimes people overplay that aspect, mm-hmm, of it, and I don't want to.
Especially with mental health stuff, too.
Yeah, with, yeah, mental health, sometimes people will blame spiritual things when that's, mm-hmm, not it. You know, it could be chemical, it could be, mm, PTSD, whatever.
Yeah.
I just wondered if you had any thoughts on that.
Yeah, like not everybody's demon possessed and that's,
no,
why they're depressed.
Exactly.
And also demons are real.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think that has played a big impact in my life, actually.
Okay.
Especially with a lot of lies that I've believed.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that makes sense.
And a lot of darkness that I've dwelled in. Mm. And yeah, there have been many times where I just ruminate on how worthless I am and how much I deserve to die and how much I deserve to be punished and,
mm,
things like that. Or yeah, like the things will never get better, or God,
yeah,
isn't really there, you know? And
all lies.
All lies.
All lies.
All lies.
Yeah.
I don't stand by any of those things.
Yeah, that's what you're saying. Yep.
But it's so sneaky sometimes, because,
yeah,
when you're in those moments, that's so true. And then it's actually not, but the devil's pretty sneaky.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And uses a lot of trauma to be like, that's what's real. Or there have been times where I've like had those voices and ruminating thoughts, and I've been like, oh, that's the devil using things that my mom has told me.
Mm. Wow.
But that's not real. You,
yeah,
know, like,
yeah,
I don't think that, and God doesn't see me like that. So I definitely think that that is a very real aspect.
So then it, mm, sounds like you're saying that in a moment like that, for you to start to state what is true is helpful. God doesn't say that.
Mm-hmm.
Would you agree with that?
Yeah, and also sometimes fact-checking with a friend.
Yes, yes.
That's
a very valid.
Doing your own research.
Yeah,
that's great.
Yeah, because,
yeah,
when you're in those moments, like, I can't get myself out of that all the time.
Mm, right.
And over with practice, I'm getting better at that. And,
mm-hmm,
I have a lot of reminders around my apartment. And I have a safety box, and in that has like a stack of,
great,
letters or pictures,
oh, cool,
of like safe things that I know are true and like healthy and beautiful.
Brilliant.
That's beautiful, yeah.
I have a safety book that has like reminders and verses and things that,
mm-hmm,
people have told me. And so using tools like that that have been really helpful, but also remembering the truth, and when,
yeah,
I'm not panicking and when I'm not in like the deepest pits, like what I knew then was true,
yeah,
is still true when I'm in the pit.
Yeah.
Um, And
oh, that's cool.
And sometimes phoning a friend literally or figuratively, like, hey, I feel like I should die. Is that true? And usually my friends say no.
Usually?
Okay, all the time.
That's awesome. Yeah.
I'd like to read this verse. This is from Ezekiel, and the Lord is speaking to these false prophets. And this particular one just really struck my heart. It says, because you have disheartened the righteous person with lies when I intended no distress. And it goes on, he's going to punish them for that. But what really struck me,
it's pretty much, yeah.
What struck me is that he's calling them out. It's not just you lied, you disheartened my righteous people. And the Hebrew word there for disheartened is actually to cause great pain. To their heart, like heart pain. And he says, and I intended no distress, no grief. To me, that's like when lies come in people and they're being disheartened, they're suffering that anguish, that God is just, you know,
you see that
rising up to defend. You know what I mean? Go ahead.
You see that with Jesus when he's sitting around and they're like, sorry, you can't heal this guy on the Sabbath. And like he gets angry. You know? What, okay. So we just went through this book called Job.
Oh, I've heard of it.
What did that mean to you? Like, how did that, that season of sermons impact you?
I think that it was really interesting because I think about suffering a lot, but a lot of people I realize in my community and our community don't. And so it was really funny, and I really appreciated it, but a lot of people would reach out to me and be like, oh, we're talking about mental health and suffering, and I just was thinking of you.
That's amazing.
Okay. It's like when Darren messaged me about, oh, we're doing this podcast about suffering, and I was thinking,
oh, gosh. Oh,
here we go.
I'm nice. One of them.
Yeah,
this you're is one like of the them. Worst. Just draw an L on my forehead, please.
No, no. He trusted your witness. He wanted your witness. This is good.
No, but I appreciated that. But it was really interesting to see how other people were kind of processing things in a different way. And thinking about mental health and, oh, Job's friends were good and bad and like sitting with people's really good and all of this other stuff is maybe not as helpful. And, I don't, yeah, it was, I feel like that was the biggest thing that was like surprising to me throughout that series. Which I guess isn't necessarily the actual sermons, but the context around it.
But like, you think about these things because you have to.
Yeah.
And all these other people, it's like they're thinking about it for the first time. And so you get to observe them rather than have to process in the same way.
Yeah. And also just like being on people's minds more of like, mental health is chronic and suffering. How God views suffering more and... it was really interesting to watch other people process and think about sadness a little bit more.
When it's your lived reality,
When it's my day-to-day. And that's also been really isolating a lot of the time because I feel like I can't talk to people because it's a real downer sometimes.
And most of us are trying to ignore suffering or put it at arm's length. We talked about that in the first podcast, I think.
It actually isn't a downer. Unless the person has trouble listening to that. But if people are talking to me about, I mean, I've had a couple family members go through long-term mental health issues. And I actually appreciated talking to them. It was never too heavy or too hard for me because, because I love them. And honestly, just listening and them having a chance to talk helps.
Interesting. Well, you were going to keep on going, seemed like.
What was I gonna say? I think that I was gonna say also about like not wanting to share traumatic memories with friends.
Oh,
or
yeah.
There have been a lot of times throughout my job where I've taken care of like suicidal children or like really hard things at work. And so then I'm like carrying my own like PTSD and trauma and like trying not to die or hurt myself and eating three meals a day and like the heaviness of that and then caring for other people. And then I feel like everybody in their teens and 20s right now wants to die and is struggling with like homosexuality and like everybody is depressed and gay. I'm like trying to like talk to people and be open, but then also not be triggering or you know, it's a really hard balance sometimes, and I think I still haven't figured that out, but I don't know.
That's important. I'm glad you said that, because it does matter who you choose to confide in.
Because some people say, just take a walk. And then some people some people sit there and listen and try to understand or be helpful sometimes. Sometimes don't be helpful. Sometimes actually I take that back. That's not
right.
Helpful.
Don't fix me.
Don't fix me.
Just just listening, though.
Yes, yeah.
And
yeah,
that must be so hard, and I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
A burden shared is a burden lifted. You need a place to unpack some of that stuff. It's just such a Christian word. But, you really do. You need a place to be able to talk through that stuff.
Yeah.
So I have another question for you, I think, that would be, like, there are other people in our church that have chronic mental illness things going on or chronic mental health problems going on. Is there any, like, words from Sarah that you would say to these folks that might actually be, like, if they're listening, then they're in the same boat as you? Or maybe their thing is different. Maybe they deal with OCD or deal with, you know, something else. It's like chronically.
I've got that OCD, too. When I hear my diagnosis list, I've got a little of everything.
Well, that's up to you.
No, but, I know.
This is going out to our thousands of listeners.
I don't care who knows.
That's pretty cool, though, Sarah. Yeah, that's pretty cool. Yeah.
That was OCD. Sorry. I'm derailing.
What would you say?
Musings with Sarah.
There you go.
I would say, don't listen to all of the lies. And it's okay to take a break, and it's okay to ask for help.
Yeah.
And it's okay to say, my world is literally crumbling, and I'm alone.
Yeah.
And sometimes people won't understand that. And sometimes people will be really nasty about it. And that's not about you. It's about them, you know, when they don't know how to deal with it and they haven't dealt with their own problems. And there are people who will be hopeful and you'll find them along the way. And you will learn about God's character, and you will learn about not everything you think is true is true. Sometimes we get lies in our heads and we can't get rid of them by ourselves.
Right.
Sometimes we can't get up or make food or afford to pay for therapy or whatever it is. And that's what family's for. And we don't always have original family. I don't have original family that I can talk to, but that's okay, because God provides. And you know, sometimes you might think that you're going to die, and you don't have to, you know. There is a future, and even if you can't feel hope right now, there will be someday. And sometimes you have to stick around until you can start to see that a little bit.
Rad.
That's
really
beautiful.
Cool. Yep. I don't know what more we can say after that. I mean, that was so helpful.
I'd like to read. I made a little list of teachings of Job, do's and don'ts. And this is, I actually did this a few years ago, but I'll just read the captions. Do, be kind. Each one has a scripture, but I'm not going to read that. Be kind, be silent, strengthen them and lessen their pain. Have compassion on them, listen to them, and make sure the Lord is the source of your wisdom. Here's the don'ts. Don't talk to them out of your own fears. Let there be no injustice in what you say. Don't think you're better than them. Don't misrepresent God. And don't forget that you're accountable for the judgment you pass on them. Oof. Those are all of, Job literally was giving his friends advice. Those are the things he told them to do.
It's pretty cool, Suzanne. Really helpful. Yeah.
She went up to me with Job's
words. That wasn't me. That was Job.
She knew how to end it. That's really cool. Like, I don't know if you'd be up for sharing that, but if you would, you can email us and we'll send you that. It's, I see the scriptures on the page she's got here too. So I bet you Suzanne would send that to you if you send us an email. podcast@imprintchurch.org.
Oh, there you go.
We'll send it to you.
Y'all have an email?
Yeah, I mean, we're legit.
You're fancy.
We have two people listening.
That's right. Sarah, this is a gift for you sharing your story.
Yes,
I think I think for people that are out there that are dealing with chronic mental or emotional pain, this is so much more than you can ever imagine. So thank you. Thank you for sharing. So
thank you for listening.
Yes, it's
been lovely having you. You're a very entertaining and enjoyable guest.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I like to say I'm funny because of the trauma.
And it's probably great prophets, true. All great prophets and comics are.
Yeah, that's so true.
Yeah, mm-hmm. You said a couple of really funny things to me that were like, before. It was amazing.
There have been so many times where I've told a joke to friends who have not grown up in certain types of families, and they don't know.
They just say
they don't find the humor.
And I think that's hilarious.
That's amazing.
Mm-hmm. So you get the double laugh.
I think that some people weren't traumatized as children, and it shows. Mm. And I love that for them.
Oh my gosh.
Anyway, so what a note.
On that note, we're going to end our three-part series on chronic pain. Thanks for joining us for this. If you have questions or comments, please, again, email us at podcast@imprintchurch.org. Thank you, Sarah, again. Say hi to her on Sunday. Mm-hmm. Tell her you love her. Thank you for sharing your story again. Mm-hmm. And we'll be back with another series one of these days. It might not be 2 years till the next podcast, but it might be.
Up to
no,
you.
We have to do something sooner. It's too long.
If you have ideas, friends, if you have anything you thought would be worth us talking about, please send us an email and just say, hey, have you thought about doing something on this? And maybe we'll consider that.
Yeah.
I think it's helpful in our discipleship to Jesus. So
good. Yeah, and if you need prayer, we have a prayer team here. We'd love to pray for you about any of this stuff.
Yeah, if these three episodes have brought up something in you that you feel like you should share, take Sarah's advice. You know, call a friend. Phone a friend. Yeah, we're here. All right. Thanks, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.
Peace.